Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Vlad.
I am Mark.
And this week started with the Build 2016 registration.
Yeah, so we told you last week to go ahead and register as soon as you could because normally it sells out within an hour, if not a day. This one was a little quicker.
Yeah, and we didn't expect it, honestly.
No.
It was a big surprise, and it just went in less than 1 minute.
Yeah, basically you hit refresh one moment, and it was not time to purchase, and another time you were unfortunately out of luck. So the Build conference, once again, March 30th through April 2nd in San Francisco, sold out in about a minute. We've got an update from Googs on here, talking a little bit about it. We'll be broadcasting portions of it, and the sessions will be available on Channel 9. So if you do not get a ticket, you'll be able to, you know, tune in here. But
yeah, and you can still join the wait list.
I was going to say, yeah, definitely join the wait list if you're still interested. Quite often, people will jump in there and register, and there will be a few slots, especially when it gets closer to the event. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested, definitely jump on that.
Do it.
All right.
Then we move to ASP.NET. yeah, that was, we discussed this news just before shooting the show, and we were like, we're changing the names, and basically what used to be ASP.NET 5.1 now becomes ASP.NET Core 1.0, and it's just basically a different generation of ASP.NET. It's not just another version.
Right, yeah, so it is, if you've been using 5 beta for a while, that is that code base, but it is core, meaning it's kind of a subset. It's kind of the new lean, different way of doing it. So it's open it makes source. Sense to rename it mm-hmm. just because there's less confusion. This is the open source version. It's cross-platform. It's stuff that runs across more and more devices. So it's kind of a new beginning, building off of what was there. So go ahead and read the Scott Hanselman article here. You'll get a bunch of information what this means for both ASP.NET and .NET Core altogether, now 1.0.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, moving on to Channel 9.
Yes.
Yeah, there is actually a new section, a new page on Channel 9 where with the videos made by MVPs. So it's basically MVP channel. You know that the MVPs are very good people for Microsoft. We love these...
They're fantastic partners.
Valuable professionals, right?
Microsoft Valley Professional, most yeah. Valued Professional, yeah.
So they really helped Microsoft to be successful, and we are trying to make them successful as well. So that's basically a joint effort for them to spread the word, right?
Yeah.
Going to visit, they already shoot some cool videos.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they produce, and hey, maybe even partner with them on some of the content we produce on here, absolutely.
Exactly.
A little bit more about core things. So there's Windows 10 IoT Core, mm-hmm. and one of the things that runs on there is Node.js. And this is the world we live in now. Microsoft submitted a pull request to Node.js to pull in the open source Chakra engine, the Chakra
exactly,
Core
yeah.
JavaScript engine. So the same JavaScript engine that runs Win.js on your Windows 10 device and powers Microsoft Edge. We're looking to get into Node.js, and then that'll all run on IoT Core. So, like, if you want to run on a Raspberry Pi and have a Node.js server running, that works under our JavaScript engine.
That's a big thing. And when you run Node.js on Windows 10 IoT Core, you can use UWP platform APIs, which is, again, a big deal because they simplify a lot of things like camera access, for example.
Yeah. Like, or just again, like you're familiar
sensors,
with
yeah.
writing your desktop app or your phone app, it now just extends onto IoT, which is this umbrella for everything. Again, I think they list on here the Raspberry Pi 2, the Dragon Board, lots of other stuff that's out there. It'll just work. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I would say it's a big new world for Node.js with this UWP support.
Yeah.
Yeah, and talking about new worlds, actually, Minecraft, we just announced education editions for school. What does it mean?
Yeah, so I think the important thing here is this is the start of something, the kind of Microsoft Minecraft Education Edition. For the students using it, it'd essentially be the same Minecraft that they know and love. That's kind of the point. We want to bring something that children are already using and not change that, but use it for additional uses. So this is more of a thing for educators to go ahead and be able to load worlds on servers, and a bunch of modifications to allow teachers to show different presentations or create lesson plans. There's also a website that's launching that will allow us to submit and share Minecraft worlds and lesson plans. It's kind of crazy. The picture they show is a giant eyeball built in voxels. So you can kind of see, you know, maybe anatomy or anything else that you want to display. Again, this is just using a medium that your students are already using, so it's a great way to connect with these kids these days.
Yeah, that's a real example of principle play and learn, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, yeah.
No kidding. Talking about education and other nonprofit organizations, we just announced a big donation of basically $1 billion in the form of cloud computing resources for nonprofit organizations, for universities, and different kinds of communities around the world.
So over the next 3 years, we'll be using $1 billion of cloud computing resources to, jointly said, cloud services. So for nonprofits that want to have services, APIs, or websites, they can use that. Serving researchers, like I said, at universities. I said over 900 universities, and then Azure with machine learning and all sorts of other things that we can allow people to access there, and then expanding broadband access to communities in 15 countries. So that's something that I want to read more about, because I didn't know that we actually did a lot of that kind of connectivity work.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
That's really cool, because there's a lot of places where you don't have that, and just the act of connecting people to the internet in any form or fashion is a huge change, right? A lot of us take it for granted, but that's the entire world's wealth of knowledge now available practically instantaneously.
Yeah, basically the broadband connections for the cloud, it's like the roads for
your car. That's a great way to put it. It's enabling infrastructure in a much more immediate fashion. So that's very cool. That's with the Microsoft Business Development, Microsoft Philanthropies, which was just recently announced.
Cool. Moving on the cloud thing. You probably heard about the Cortana Analytics Suite and machine learning as basically part of that. And we're finally expanding tutorials, not just APIs. APIs are available for everyone, but tutorials and documentation on this case, it's iOS, right? So basically, if you are an iOS developer or you're also an iOS developer, now you can easily understand how to start building Azure ML-based apps on iOS, on iPhone, in this case.
This is all through Visual Studio, too. Mm-hmm. So the tools you know and love, using Xamarin, which ships with Visual mm-hmm. Studio, to go ahead and create your iOS app. And there's basically a full template available to you. So not just, like you said, like go and look at the docs mm-hmm. and everything. Gives you a nice a boost to getting started with that.
Yeah, and now you basically easily can get started with machine learning and predictive analytics in this particular case. From iOS to Android. Yeah, Microsoft Garage has just shipped a new, Mimicker Alarm app. For Android, and that's another great example of using machine learning and Project Oxford in particular.
Personally, this app sounds like torture. It's a way to make sure you wake up in the morning, and for those of us who have trouble doing that, that's very much me. This has some interesting, little innovative ways for showing you examples of how to use the Oxford machine learning API set. For example, it may say, make a happy face. And there's emotional tracking mm-hmm. you can do via the camera to test like what kind of emotion that you're expressing, so you can do that. Or find something of a certain color, or speech APIs, and listen to you. So various ways, again, to test you mm-hmm. in the morning to see if you're actually awake. Apparently just hitting snooze isn't good enough.
I don't know if they have an option for making a sleepy face. If they do, don't use it.
Close your eyes. Okay.
You're done. And from Android to back to Windows.
We're making a
Windows
full circuit
10.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah, it just happened. Today is Thursday, right? We're
yes.
shooting this on Thursday. And today we announced, and Dropbox announced, that finally Dropbox Universal Windows app is available for Windows 10. There is a blog post by Steve Guggenheimer. There's also another blog post made by Dropbox folks. It's a big deal. First, it's a very good app, and you know, it's not a secret that Rudy, which is an author of many cool apps on Windows and Windows Phone.
A ton of Windows Phone apps, yeah. Excellent apps.
He actually made this application. He was a lead for this and at Dropbox. And this application is excellent, but particularly for two of us, giving our interests within Microsoft, the most interesting feature is that this app supports Windows Hello.
It's one of the, I think it may be the first third-party app that does. And I absolutely been loving it on my Surface Book. Sometimes it scares me how quickly it'll scan me on my couch, pull it over. By the time I get it onto my lap, I'm signed in. That's awesome.
Yeah, so you can just use your fingerprint or your face to sign in to Dropbox and use your files. Yeah, and if you ask where is the Windows Phone version of it, they say it's coming, they're just polishing the mobile UX.
Yep, so just finish up that UI, and then it'll be the same code running in both places, again using Windows Hello, just in a different form factor. Pretty awesome.
Big deal. And we reached the peak of the week.
All right.
Stuff. My peak of the week, which I usually do for already I don't know how many times in a row, I have two peaks of the week.
So sure.
I just put them on one slide. And my first one is, they actually both about availability of videos and slides for two events that happened in December, mm-hmm. December 2015, so basically last year. The first one is about the Neural Information Processing System Conference. And that's basically a conference about neural networks in general. So if you want to be on the cutting edge and understand like what's going on, in this neural network science, then you're gonna go and watch, and it's really interesting. Even if you are not a big pro in this area. The second one is actually the ImageNet and MS COCO joint workshop, which is also about neural networks, but for image processing, for image understanding, for object recognition, semantic segmentation, and all this stuff. So they're primarily talking about convolutional neural network. And it's also like a cutting edge. They explain how they do things, how they make all these self-driving cars, right? How they run it on GPU, because this is what you need these days. That's really interesting thing, and it's very hot now. It's like a big area of
Well, I think the craziest thing is this used to be such a hard problem to do in real time that it was always this post-process stuff. I'm talking like 10 years ago or mm-hmm. so. And now it's gotten to the point where you can do it on GPU, you can do it on your phone because you've got a full GPU sitting in your pocket. And so to be able to do this stuff on the go, readily accessible, is super exciting. And like you said, in cars and phones and computers, it's pretty pervasive nowadays.
Cool. What's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is going out to space. The newest news is that astronomers believe they have found another planet in our solar system, not just another planet randomly. And what they say they think is, so they haven't seen the planet itself. However, there's a bunch of other bodies that are moving together. And it could just be that it's a coincidence that these six other celestial bodies are moving in the same kind of pattern, but it's very, very, very unlikely. So the only actual plausible reason is that there's another, they believe, roughly Neptune size. So not small either. This isn't another Pluto, maybe planet, maybe not planet. This is something that the reason we haven't seen it is because it's so far out that the orbit it takes, they're estimating, would be about 1,500 years to circle the sun once. So if you try to go back to how this was done, a millennia ago, mm-hmm. was people would jot down the positions of everything every day, of stars every day, and then over time would be able to calculate how long it took. No one quite lived that long. Notebooks kind of deteriorated over 1,500 years. So very interesting. It's been referred to as Planet X, which is always confusing to me because that'd be 10. Uh-huh. There's only 9 planets. I don't know why you'd skip number 9 and just go straight to 10.
It's a very popular thing these days.
That's all we have for you this week on Channel 9. Thanks for joining us.
And have fun.